My name is Inigo Montoya. Killed my father. Prepare to die. And also listen to our podcast, because you're here. Welcome to Popcorn Optional, your weekly movie podcast where we talk all things movie. And as some of you may have guessed, tonight we are doing a review for the 30th anniversary of The Princess Bride, the classic 1987 Rob Reiner film starring everybody you love. I'm Cameron Salina, and tonight with me are Jake Brown and Trevor Allison. Hey, guys.
What's up?
You're right, I do love Andre the Giant.
Yes. If you don't love Andre the Giant, then go listen to a different podcast right now.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you guys later. I gotta head out.
One Popcorn Optional co-host down for the night, and we're only 20 seconds in. First, we're going to talk some news items. We're going to do another segment of honorable mentions. There's a whole lot of trailers that came out in the past week we're going to get to. As we said before, then we're going to do a review of Princess Bride, and then we'll end with our content of the week. Let's go ahead and hop into the items of news, the first of which being that the day has come where James Cameron has finally started production on Avatar 2, which he plans to shoot not even back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back with Avatars 2, 3, 4, and 5, but all at the same time. He said that during the first month, they'll shoot things for the fifth one, and during the last months of production, they'll be shooting things for the second and third one. Did we ever think this day would come?
I mean, you have to be organized to make a good film, so sounds like he's got that unlocked.
Yeah, I still don't understand why these exist. Like, it's been, if it was like 2 years after the first Avatar came out, then go for it. But I mean, it's, what is it, like almost 9 years?
Yeah, it came out in 2009.
Yeah, so just why? Like, why are we doing this? And five? Like, do we really need five of these things? I don't know.
So this is the part that's funny to me, is that the first one, so Avatar 2 comes out in 2020. Avatar 3 comes out in 2021. Then they're going to take a three-year break. And the next one will come out in 2024, even though they will have shot it all at the same time, then 2025. So by the time that the fifth one comes out, my son, who was born in December of 2016, will be 9.
So that's weird. Also, so is Cameron like anticipating like his own existential issues with editing these films or something? Is he like he's gonna have a Terrence Malick moment where like he just isn't gonna be able to get it right before he's even started shooting? Like, I don't understand why you take a break if something is in the can.
I don't know. I don't like
it. I think we're all scratching our heads over this one.
Unless he's got like really good research on franchise fatigue, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but franchise fatigue is only when they start doing the same thing. Which, like, look at Star Wars. Like, there are two films in, five more planned, and everybody's like, give me as many Star Wars films as you can have. So, I've been on record as saying I like Avatar, the original. I don't think it's a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination. I think it did revolutionize the film industry more than 99% of other films that have come out since 2000. But I don't think it's a great film that needs... sequels 2, 3, 4, and 5.
It's gonna have to become something very different at some point. I don't know where this story turns into four more installments.
I think it's basically the Star Wars route. Like, he's created this universe, this whole planet of beings, and I mean, I think there's gonna be mermaid avatar people and flying avatar people, and yeah, it's gonna be a disaster.
But is anybody excited about any of those Avatar or Na'vi people?
No.
Bueller? No. Anybody? No? Okay.
Nope. Alrighty. Well, that's it for Avatar 2. You know, maybe we get this film in December 2020, but it was originally supposed to come out in December of 2014. So we're already 6 years behind. Let's see how far off that date gets. The next piece of news is half exciting, half even more head scratching. And once again involves James Cameron, in that Linda Hamilton, the original Sarah Connor, and Arnold Schwarzenegger will be returning to make a Terminator 6 directed by Tim Miller, who directed Deadpool last year, and produce, and supposedly the story treatment is by James Cameron. It'll take place after T2 Judgment Day and pretty much disregard T3, Rise of the Machines, Terminator Salvation, and Genesis, and just kind of start over, I guess. Guys, what was your reaction to this one?
See, this I am into, to go on what I believe to be one of Cameron's most mediocre works into what may be his best work, and definitely his best original work. I didn't realize this. I was reading this today. Terminator is an original idea from James Cameron. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is... I don't even know... Why isn't he spending his time on this? The Terminator universe is much more... Much richer, much more interesting, much more realistic and terrifying than the Avatar world. Like Skynet is like a thing that could happen.
It's called Amazon. It's happening.
Right, I know, right? Right? So, like, this is actually interesting to me. I'm fine with them disregarding the other crap films that weren't really made with James Cameron's involvement. That's cool, whatever. I'm actually very intrigued by this.
I'm also into this. I'm more excited about this than Avatar. The only thing I'm concerned about is, like, old Arnold Schwarzenegger being the Terminator. Like, how's that gonna work out? I don't know.
Yeah. Did either of you guys see Genesis?
No, I saw 3, but I did not see Salvation or Genesis.
Same.
Okay. Yeah, Genesis, the one that featured old Arnold and then also Jai Courtney and Emily Clark, was awful. And part of that was how terrible Schwarzenegger was. Like, to see him, if you watch like T1 and T2 and then go watch Genesis, you're just like, how far he has fallen from where he was.
Well, yeah, I mean, the dude's like, what, 75? It's like watching, like, when you see him and like Sylvester Stallone all roided out at 75, it's just like gross. You're just like, oh, please stop.
Yeah, he's become like a cultural parody of himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Donald Trump.
There right. We go. And full circle back into politics. Alrighty. Moving on into the last piece, which is a little bit more of something I'm excited to talk about, which is the idea of VR movie watching. There is new technology coming out that is a VR headset with noise-canceling headphones, and it is supposed to be... It's coming out on Kickstarter. It's called Cinera Headset. And it's supposed to be the closest thing that you can possibly get to actually watching a movie on a big screen while being at your home. And what ends up happening is that the VR gives you the experience by the size of the screen within your headset of actually being in a cinema. So what's your guys' takeaway from this? Are you interested in the idea of being able to watch movies like this at home?
Yeah, I mean... Who wouldn't be? I think the theater sales and rise of Netflix and stuff would show that. I think my big concern is just the fact that it's Kickstarter. You know, I've backed 2 Kickstarters in my life, and I have a rule that I'm never going to back another one because it either never comes or it's a piece of crap or whatever. So I'm open to this idea, and like the science behind the closeness to your eyes and blah, like that's totally legitimate. And I've had experience with like VR interactive media with goggles and stuff, short films, animated stuff that is super immersive and really impressive. But that was stuff by like Google. So I'm excited about the future of this kind of stuff, but I just don't know if this is the company that's going to bring it for us.
All right. I'm going to be the curmudgeon on this. I don't like any part of it. I don't like putting something on my head. Who's going to pay for my chiropractor bill when my neck and back are destroyed from having something that probably weighs at least 5 pounds, maybe more, on my head?
I think MoviePass covers that.
It's in the bylines.
We just talked about Skynet. There's some obvious Skynet issues here, potentially. Okay. Then also, that was mostly a joke.
It's kind of real.
Right. I have like a philosophical issue with virtual reality, with this like replacement of reality kind of idea. it's really interesting and cool, and I think there's some cool stuff where it can kind of take you places you were never able to go, but I think that our brains aren't really, I don't know. I feel like it can like overtake our brains somehow. It makes me feel weird. The idea of having something so like enclosed within, like almost happening inside of your mind.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I'm with you. I think one of the things for me about going to a movie is being able to watch a movie with a crowd, and the way that certain scenes are built up more with a crowd of their reaction to it. Not to mention the whole VR thing has always given me or reminded me of Dwight Schrute's Second Life. It feels very, it's not the way that movie, and I hate to be this person, but it's not the way that movies were intended to be seen. And it's just, I think we're moving away from that community idea of watching a movie and talking about it, which is why we started this podcast, so that we could talk about movies. But I think the idea that the average moviegoer is going to not even have the ability or will have the option to not even watch this movie with people if they want to is a sad idea, because I think you lose so much when you lose the community of film.
Yeah, I agree. There's a social aspect to it that is, I mean, like, are you supposed to have like 8 of these in your house so you and your friends can all watch the same thing with your headsets on? Like, that's a weird part of it to me. Now, where I can see the usefulness of this, where the only medium that I might use this for is for video games. I could see that much more than movies.
I don't know. Jake, have you ever played any VR video games?
I don't think I have. I feel like I would remember if I had. I've done some like interactive short film stuff where you have to like track the action, and that's pretty cool because you're able to be dropped into like an actual world. But I haven't done anything with like actual video game stuff.
Yeah, Trevor, I think you've hit on something interesting there, which is kind of goes outside the film realm, which is the desire that people have to be interactive with the media that they consume. And I think that's why video games are so popular, is because it's not just a sit back and watch. It's a active participant. And I think marrying what Jake just said of having to follow the action short films and, you know, story-driven video games seem to be the direction that a lot of media is moving in, because it's the way that a lot of people prefer to consume that media, is to be interactive with it.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we have for news tonight. Let's go ahead and get into honorable mentions. Now, for those of you who are new here and just listening for the first time, honorable mentions is a segment that we do every other week, every 3 weeks, so on, where we nominate people for the Honorable Mensch Hall of Fame. And to get into the Honorable Mensch Hall of Fame, what you have to be is a person who has been in more than 5 pieces of work, whether that's you've directed 5 pieces, you've acted in 5 pieces, you've written more than 5 pieces. And part of that is, the big part of that is, if we knew nothing else about the film other than you as an actor, writer, director were involved in it, is that enough to get us to go see it? So like past people have been like Steven Spielberg. Like if all we knew was that Steven Spielberg was directing a movie, is that enough to make us go see a movie by itself? We don't know anything about the plot, characters, actors. All we know is Steven Spielberg is directing it. Is that enough? If Andy Serkis is acting in it, is that enough to make us want to go see it? So that's kind of the breakdown of honorable mentions. Let's get into our 4th round of honorable mensch nominees. Jake, what is your honorable mensch nominee for this week?
Okay, this is somebody who I thought of day one when we started doing this thing, but he hasn't for some reason come up on my list yet. But today's the day, y'all. Today is the day, and he has a project coming up in the near future that makes me really excited. And I think it's going to get him his first overdue Oscar, and that is director of photography, Roger Deakins.
What film is he DP on Blade Runner 2049?
Yep. And yes. It looks incredible.
I'll go ahead and go and say that, yeah, 100%. I think Deakins is the best working, cinematographer right now. And, he is, I think, the one probably cinematographer that the average moviegoer might know. Mm-hmm. I don't really know of a lot of other cinematographers that are as well known as him and that have just kind of stuck with doing cinematography and not tried to branch in to other pieces of cinematography. I mean, you have people like Wally Pfister, who broke into directing and now hasn't kind of been around for a little bit. But yeah, 100% on Deakins. Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, he works with, I'm looking at his filmography, and he works with great directors so often that I'm like not sure if he makes them better or they make him better or they make each other better or what the deal is. But these are great films that he's in. He's frequently worked with the Coen brothers, who are already honorable mentions, who we love. But I'll say, I think the interesting thing about Deakins is I don't feel like all of his stuff looks the same, but it all does what it needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I can appreciate that he doesn't work only on the same kind of film over and over again. These are some pretty varied films if you look at his filmography.
Yeah, I think he's simultaneously a person that like blends in. Like he's kind of a, he always says one of my favorite quotes of his is, the best cinematography is one that you don't notice. It just tells the story as beautifully as possible. And I think that he's the best at that by far. But at the same time, like, I can turn on a film and just have a feeling that it's Roger Deakins. You know, you're just like, man, this is so good. I think this is Deakins, and it is. And yeah, I mean, I think he is the best cinematographer probably ever. And Chivo is also incredible. And he's basically stolen the Oscar from him the last few times he's been nominated. I mean, he deserved it, but he won it all three times. And so we'll hope that Deakins pulls it off with Blade Runner. And watching the trailers, I mean, it just looks gorgeous. So I'm super excited about it.
Alrighty, Trevor, your nomination for honorable mensch.
All right. I'm not necessarily intending this. We haven't, to be quick, we're moving pretty quick in this podcast, and I'm fine with that. But this is going to be a really fast one because somehow I guess we're just kind of dancing around this person and haven't quite had everything else. But we're going to put Christopher Nolan in tonight. We're just going to put him on the list.
You're pretty confident.
If you're feeling iffy, go read the cinematography or his filmography.
No, he's for sure in. He's one of my favorite directors of all time. And so yeah, that's a definite yes for me.
I mean, his last three films are The Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, and Dunkirk. I should also mention that to be an honorable mensch, you have to get a unanimous yes vote in. Gosh, I hate to do this. No, yeah, he's in. He's in. I just wanted a little attention. Yeah, he's in. I was trying to drag it out to add some more time because of what Trevor said, but you know, he's in. He's a for sure in.
We could say this. I think that you could. There's an argument to be made that like Dunkirk is his worst film. Like that. I don't agree with that, but you could make that argument, and that's insane. Like to think about someone through that scope.
Yeah.
I don't think a single person could make that argument after seeing The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
I mean, also you could also say that's his worst film, and that's also insane to be someone's worst film.
Yeah. That's if Nolan's at his worst, he's still better than 90% of the people working in Hollywood. So, I mean, that's, you're doing pretty good. Boom. Nolan.
Alrighty.
This is a heck of a class so far. Cameron, don't let us down.
All right, I'm hoping not to let us down. This is someone who has been one of my favorite people to watch on screen for a while now. They are somebody who, when you watch them on screen, you are entertained every single time. You are in awe of the work that they do. And you're kind of just scratching your head going, how is this person consistently film to film this good. And this person is none other than Emma Stone.
Oh, man, I wanted to put Emma Stone in. But yes, she's like my favorite actress working in Hollywood right now. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes, Jake?
Yeah, for sure. For sure, yes from me.
She was my second. If one of you guys said Nolan tonight, that's who I was going to say. Me and Cam talked about her a few times last week, talking about Easy A and her appearance in Superbad and just how great she is. Yeah, and also she's playing Cruella de Vil soon, so that's weird.
Yep.
Incredibly intrigued by that.
I watched La La Land for the first time a couple nights ago on a little date night. And yeah, I mean, I have thoughts about La La Land, which we can get into later, but she's by far the best part of that movie.
Thoughts good or bad?
I think it's good. Like, it's a good movie. I just think it's like really overhyped and rated. It's like two white people falling in love about jazz in LA. Like, ugh. Like, cool. But it's good. Like, it's really good. But I think I'm glad it didn't win Best Picture.
All righty.
So there's my thoughts on La La Land.
All righty. Well, those are our honorable mentions for the night. Welcome Roger Deakins, Christopher Nolan, and Emma Stone. Welcome to the club, guys. Next up, we have trailers from the past week. Now, there are a couple of trailers that came out the past week that I think are worthy to be talked about. I butchered that. That's okay, though, because we're going to go ahead and talk about honorable mensch Wes Anderson's newest film, Isle of Dogs. Guys, did you have a chance to check out this trailer?
Yep.
Yep, saw it.
What'd you guys think?
It's Wes Anderson.
I mean,
I'm gonna take it as Jake is not interested.
Oh no, I'm interested. It's just like, it's just Wes Anderson, you know.
it's what he does. He has the crazy thing about Wes Anderson is that his animated films have the same aesthetic as his live action films. Like,
yes.
How do you do that? Yeah, I mean, this looks really interesting. It looks like a really unique kind of story. It's Wes Anderson being Wes Anderson, which is always good. And it has the voice cast in this is amazing. Did you guys see that like flash on the,
like, if you just go down the voice list on IMDb, everybody on the first page is a big name Hollywood star. And then you can go to see full cast on IMDb, scroll past that group, and there's still even more big names.
I mean, everybody wants to be in a Wes Anderson movie.
It's like Tarantino. It's one of those directors everybody wants to work with.
That's right. And we've got the usual suspects, you know, Scarlett Johansson, Tilda Swinton, Bill Murray, Edward Norton. So, I mean, it's Wes Anderson being Wes Anderson. I'm ready for this.
His last computer animated stop motion film, Fantastic Fox, is fantastic. And I think this is looking to keep up that tradition. The next trailer that came out this past week, though, is a new trailer for what's sure to be a smash hit, Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and Karen Gillan. Guys, did this trailer change your mind at all about being interested in this, or did this push you farther away?
I don't know. I mean, I think this is going to be like a fun movie, like a fun, stupid movie. It's just going to be a fun, stupid movie, you know?
Yeah.
I think I said this when we first talked about it, but I still think it would be a more interesting film if it was like just those random high schoolers. Like, the original was just like, I mean, it was Robin Williams, but it was just like regular kids having to deal with this, not like famous, super famous movie stars. It feels a little disingenuous.
I'm with you. I will say this trailer had me a little bit more interested than the past trailer that had come out. But still, it's kind of one of those films that you're like, why, who was demanding for this to be made? But I guess if a studio comes to you and is like, hey, we've got Dwayne The Rock Johnson attached to this, there's not really a studio out there that's going to be like, hey, I'm going to pass because not a big Dwayne The Rock Johnson fan.
It's people who take their whole family blindly to the movies at Christmas. That's who the target audience is.
Yes, 100%. Parents with nostalgia for the first one. But I mean, if Dwayne The Rock Johnson can make San Andreas somewhat interesting, I have hope that, you know, he'll make this movie good. Moving on to the next trailer that came out this week was the new film for Laura Croft, which is an adaptation of the Tomb Raider video games. Not continuation of anything that was happened with the Angelina Jolie Lara Croft movies, but a new whole new series starring Alicia Vikander. And guys, I gotta be honest, this trailer is kind of underwhelming, like from the shots to what the story looks like. It feels very much like generic action movie.
I actually played the video games, the new Tomb Raider, and it's one of my recommends for this week because it is actually a fantastic video game with like a great story, great characters, awesome action and fun. I mean, it's a really good game. And watching this trailer, it is basically an exact remake of the game, but as if the producers were like from the 90s and were like, let's put some cheesy like Rob Reiner jokes in there, like that'll be funny. I don't know why it has that feeling, but yeah, it doesn't quite feel like the games do.
I have a feeling that I cannot back up with any evidence that this movie is going to be better than it looks in the trailer. I don't know why I feel like that. Maybe it's because Alicia Vikander is really good and or can be really good. I'm at least intrigued at this point. I think it could be fun.
I'm hoping that it's one of those films. I like Alicia Vikander a lot. I think that she's a very talented actress, but the trailer for this film was just bleh. I should say that it's actually called Tomb Raider, not Lara Croft. So I'm wrong in that regard. But yeah, Tomb Raider coming out March 16th of next year. The next trailer is something that we've been critical about on this podcast due to our dislike of Imagine Dragons. But it's the Murder on the Orient Express trailer. The original ended with that weird Believer Imagine Dragons song. And then the new trailer came out this week. And I gotta be honest, this trailer looked a lot better. This trailer looked a lot more interesting. And for once, we have Johnny Depp doing actual acting and not let me throw some white paint on my face and do a weird accent. So
I mean, we haven't seen the whole movie. Like, you can't discount that at some point he will have white face paint on.
Supposedly it's a post-credits scene, and I didn't want to spoil that, but you know, stay after the credits, folks, because you will get to see Johnny Depp as Tonto, Mad Hatter,
yes,
Jack Sparrow, all of his weird characters all in one scene together. It's going to be fantastic. Is this trailer something that made you more interested in this movie, or are you guys still out?
I didn't see it. So Trevor, go ahead.
So I've been thinking about this movie because I've seen it marketed on TV a few times with a slightly different trailer than the original one. And kind of just been hearing about it and reading about it here and there. And I'm actually, I think the first trailer was just a bad trailer. I think this is going to be a good movie. I'm intrigued by the movie. I started to watch the second trailer, but then I was like, you know what? I don't want to know too much. And I think I've already decided that I'm good with this. I like Kenneth Branagh. I don't think he's going to do a bad job. I think the cast is really interesting and maybe enough to carry this. So I'm kind of, whereas the first trailer made me kind of meh, I'm kind of moved back in, and I am looking forward to seeing this actually.
Murder on the Orient Express comes out November 10th of this year, and we will probably do a podcast on it. I don't know if it has any mentions in it going down the list. I don't think it does. So we're not obligated by law to do it, but you know, it'd be a fun one. Alrighty, let's go ahead and get into our review of the week. In honor of the 30th anniversary, we are reviewing The Princess Bride, the 1987 Rob Reiner film. Let's just give our general thoughts. It's been out for 30 years, so we're going to get into spoilers. And if you haven't seen it, what are you doing watching anything else other than this movie? Go see it now. But general thoughts, Jake.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a super fun movie. Like, they don't make movies like this anymore. It had been a really long time since I had sat down to watch this. And I honestly don't remember if I've ever, like, sat down to watch the whole thing in a row. This is just one of those films that, like, was just always on during our childhood and always on cable, like on TBS or something. But, like, within 10 minutes, I looked at my wife and just smiled. I was like, this is just such a fun movie. It has, as the grandpa says, I mean, it has everything you could want. It has torture, love, romance, violence, adventure, like all of these things. So yeah, I mean, this is it's a classic. It's one of the classics. I think, I mean, you could easily put this in the top 100 films of all time. Like, and I wouldn't really be able to argue against you. I don't think that this movie would be made today like it is in its current state. And that kind of bums me out because there's definitely a place in the world for these kind of movies. Trevor, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a hilarious movie with a great script. It's so quotable. It's so much fun. It's so ridiculous in the best way. Yeah, I think if this movie was made today, it would be something more like Your Highness with Danny McBride, which is a god-awful, just garbage fest of a comedy movie. And I think what makes this movie stand out is that it's ridiculous and hilarious, and it's not, it fits that perfect comedy middle ground where it's not childish and silly, but it's also not crass and over the top. It's just a great film, a great work by everyone involved. Rewatchable, fun. I was watching it. I didn't rewatch the film this week, but I watched a whole bunch of clips today. I probably watched like half the movie in movie clips, and it's just so great. Still funny every time. I love it.
This is a perfect example of how to adapt a book into a movie. The original book is a very sincere, earnest take on a Renaissance film, and the movie takes that book and actually uses that book as a book to tell a story, and that's just such a beautiful nostalgic feeling. In the way that they take it in this film, you guys have kind of already said it, but it was a film that you could watch with your entire family and just enjoy beginning to end, and not even like, this is a film that I could show, I feel confident that I could show to my son at an early age, just because it's family fun, good-hearted film that you don't really have to worry about anything too adult-esque being in it. Like you guys both have said, they just don't make films like this anymore. The script is amazing. It's got some of the most rememberable lines of all time. The cast is top-notch. I mean, you could run down the list of the cast in this film, and you love every single character. Never did I ever think I would love Andre the Giant so much in a film. You can look at it from a modern standpoint of look where people like Mandy Patinkin are today, and all that he's done. Wallace Shawn, Fred Savage is kind of having a return. But then there are people like Robin Wright who are huge actresses nowadays. And is in Blade Runner 2049 coming up. But this movie is just amazing. Amazing, amazing film beginning to end. And if you haven't seen it, please go see it, because it is well, well worth your time. But let's go ahead and talk about a couple of favorite parts. There is nothing more memorable for me in this movie than the opening trials that Wesley goes through in order to win Princess Buttercup. What's your guys' favorite parts of this movie? Or when you look at this movie, what do you remember most?
I'm definitely with you that those trials are fantastic. And just how short they are, but like at the same time, like how much they say and how short they are. I watched this film, and for some reason I kept thinking about King Arthur, that piece of crap that we saw earlier this year. And just like how they were kind of trying to be the same thing, like the same general genre, the same somewhat general story, and just like a total different take on the two things. Like they even go through the same like creepy swamp, whatever. But like in this film, they do it in a way that's just like short, quick, to the point, lighthearted, and there we go. Everything's in a wide shot. I mean, just like some really nice sets and artwork. Whereas in King Arthur, it was all CGI and fast cuts and shaky cam. And it's just two very different ways to make a film. Also, I think this is one of the few instances in where that a storyteller is telling the story type of movie thing works. I generally don't like that, where it's like, sit on down, son, and I'll tell you a story. And I generally don't like that. I think in Life of Pi, they did that. And I was like, this is unnecessary. But in here, it adds to the movie in so many ways. And Fred Savage is just perfect in that role. So,
and I think that even that storytelling piece, Jake, that you were hitting on, like most times when that happens, you don't care about anything that happens because they're telling a fictionalized story. And you're like, okay, well, I kind of know the end result. Or like in this case, like it's a fictional story. Like it's not real. Why do I really care about it? Like, let's get back to the real world or what's going on. And the way that they tell this story and the way that Fred Savage and Peter Falk interact make it so lovable and interesting that it's, you know, you care just as much about these completely fictional characters as you do, you know, and characters in a lot of movies just by the way that Fred Savage and Peter Falk get into that story.
And the way that they use like the telling of the story to the grandkid in the actual story of the Princess Bride itself, of like when she's in the eels and he notices that Fred Savage is scared. So he comes back and then he starts rereading the part and Fred Savage mentions that. And so like time starts speeding up in this, like that's such a fun way to use that. I think that's something that I give a lot of credit to Rob Reiner on a lot of those decisions. His career has definitely gone a little downhill since then. but no, this is some really good direction choices on how to tell a story like this.
My favorite singular scene is, I mean, it's kind of what lines up with what you guys are saying, but the sword fight between Dread Pirate Roberts and Ego Montoya, the whole thing starting with the Dread Pirate Roberts hanging off the cliff and talking about how it would be rude for him to throw a rope down just so that he could kill him at the top, like that whole exchange, and how cordial and kind they are to each other.
Yeah.
The I am not left-handed thing. Just that whole scene is great. I read today that it was actually Cary Elwes and Mandy Patinkin doing the sword fighting, which is pretty cool. The scene with bizarre Billy Crystal as Miracle Max, that whole thing is just so ridiculous, hilarious. And the he's only mostly dead is one of my favorite lines from this movie. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing is great. It's just so much of it is so intentionally archetypal of the fairy tale story, but does things that are completely unexpected along with things that are completely predictable. So I think there's a good mix there of the ridiculousness and all of it. There's just so many great things, but yeah, I think I'm with you guys. The best sequence is Dread Pirate Roberts taking on all three of those guys and besting them. That's the whole thing is great.
The whole, you seem a decent fellow. I hate to kill you. You seem a decent fellow. I hate to die.
Yeah.
It's just such, it's good perfect writing. And then that turn when Inigo Montoya is like, I hate to tell you, but I am not left-handed, and flips the sword over. And then Dread Pirate Roberts goes, I'm not left-handed either. And you're like, oh, snap. Like, I remember as a kid being like, going from like, oh, man, he's toast, to, oh, this is about to get real good. And it does. Like, it lives up to that moment of like, the sword fight gets better at that moment. And then him besting Andre the Giant is remarkable. And at the same time, like, never have I fallen in love with a character so much as I did with Andre the Giant in that moment, because of how he's, you know, I could kill you with one throw. And then it's, you know, they're honorable criminals. And it's that moment of like, these are good people that are just kind of in a bad line of work. And then there's Wallace Shawn, who's a bad guy in a bad line of work. But you know, he gets his due. Let's go ahead and talk about kind of the end of this film. Trevor, we've kind of already gotten into the whole Billy Crystal, Miracle Max, and the bluff. You know, he said the bluff. So the end of this movie is exactly what you would expect to happen at the end of this movie. Guy gets the girl, and Inigo Montoya defeats the bad guy. Everything happens the way that you would expect. But it doesn't diminish from anything else that happens. And I think that's one of the true beauties of this film, is that they tell this story. And it goes to show that if you have lovable characters, you can tell a previously told archetypal story and get away with it because you have characters and dialogue that's interesting. at any point, does the ending fall off for you guys? Is like, does the ending like drop at all, or is it, does it follow through with the rest of the movie?
I think if this movie was 15 minutes longer, then yes, the ending would be a disappointment. But the fact that this is a tight hour and a half, we're in and out, I think it like afterwards you're just left with such like a, that was fun, like feeling, that you don't have that feeling of disappointment. At least that's what it was for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's just quick and efficient enough that it keeps moving and it keeps its humor. I think a lot of movies that are straight up comedies trying to be funny and trying to be fun sacrifice some of that for a story resolution, and I don't think that happens. I mean, even after Humperdinck surrenders, you get that great bit of physical comedy from Cary Elwes, who like starts to walk across the room and is like, nope, can't do it. And it just kind of, the laughs and the humor and the spirit of the film don't go away even with everything being settled.
We've kind of talked a little bit about some of the best lines in the movie, and there's one more line that I really want to talk about, and it's the "as you wish" line. The way that they use that line in this movie is one of the best plant and payoffs I've ever seen in a movie. More is said by saying those words than in like most films that, you know, have this two characters say "I love you" to each other.
And then the grandpa at the end saying "as you wish" to the grandson, wanting him to read it the next day. Yeah, that's, I think the whole "as you wish" thing, like at the beginning where she's like, "farm boy, blah, 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 blah," and he's like, "as you wish." I'm like, this girl sucks. She is mean. And why does like her? But I mean, that's fine. I'm not bitter or jealous or whatever. It's fine. If she wants to be that way, cool. But yes, they did do a great job of paying that off with the two characters, but then paying it off later in like the quote real world.
Okay, can you guys think back to the first time you saw this? I think I was in like seventh or eighth grade, and I was like legitimately surprised by that it was Wesley was the Dread Pirate Roberts.
I don't remember the first time I saw this. I think I've just like always seen it.
Jake came out of the womb and they're playing it in the hospital.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I feel like it's one of those movies that it's just like always on somewhere.
Yeah.
I think the first time I actually watched this was, I think my parents actually had me watch it one day when I was homesick. And I remember thinking like that was such a cool little, like, oh, that kid's homesick, I'm homesick. I don't think I was actually sick. I think I was one of those, like, I just need a day off from school. Mom, let me have a
Bueller
day.
Style.
Yes. And I didn't watch this film, and I drove my friend's car around all through Chicago, even though I was 12. What else do you guys, is there any other moments of this film that stuck out to you guys that you feel are worthy of mentioning?
I mean, One of the hilarious bits is when Fezzik and Inigo are doing that back and forth where they're rhyming everything.
Yeah.
that whole thing. And the way that the shot cuts to just the boat sailing away with still their voiceover on it. And I think that really adds to the comedy, that you can't see them and just hear them. Just that whole scene, that exchange is really funny.
I think part of what works so well about that is that all three of those actors have such distinct voices. Like, I think they're all three actors that if you just blindly heard Andre the Giant, Fezzik, or Inigo Montoya, you could, like, 90% of movie people could place exactly who those are, exactly what film that's in, because of how well acted those all three of those actors played those roles.
I'll say Wallace Shawn has a great unique voice, but at this point in my life I just hear Rex the Dinosaur whenever I hear his voice. That's like all I hear. I'm like, that's what like shows up in my brain is Rex the Dinosaur.
That's who he was. Okay, for some reason I was not placing that, and I was like, what is this? Where is his voice from?
Let me ask you guys this. Have you guys ever been to a wedding where the phrase or word "marriage" wasn't said?
I always think of Michael Scott.
Oh, okay.
And he goes through his like 4 or 5 lines to, you know, just in case.
You know, while we have time tonight, I feel like I should test out a couple different bits of comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, old Gary Scott. What a mensch. If we could, yeah, if I we mean, could yeah, mensch that's... fictional characters, Michael Gary Scott is for sure a mensch.
Yes. By far.
Someone's like, I'm going to a wedding this weekend. And someone's like, marriage. And, I mean, and you know, and like, that's just conversation. That's how it works. Cause it's so ubiquitous. And all the poor kids that have speech impediments, they get made fun of because of this movie.
Oh, no.
That's such a sad way to look at that line.
Okay. sorry.
So, what do you guys think the future of this film is? And I say that as somebody who fully plans to show this film to their son, but do you guys think this is a film that lives on 25 years from now? Like, on this film's 50th anniversary, 20 years from now, are we going to be looking back and being like, wow, that movie's 50? That movie's aged so well. And are our kids at 20 going to be like, hey, this film is still relevant. It's still worth watching. Do you guys think this film stands up to the test of time?
This is actually something that I wanted to talk to you guys about. Because I had the hardest time finding a way to watch this movie. Like, it's not on any of the streaming services. You have to buy it on iTunes to watch it. And then finally I found a way to rent it on Amazon, but the way Amazon does it is like so confusing. So it's just like, this movie is made for Netflix, and I definitely think that there's a place for it. I just think it needs to be in the place where people are watching movies now.
I agree. I think, I don't know if it does really well at like the $5 DVD bin at Target and Walmart, and that's why it's not on Netflix or something. I don't see why it wouldn't be. Like you said, Jake, it's perfect. Especially if you have like parents wanting to show their kids, you know, people that are a little bit older than us who have their kids who are like 8, 10, 12 years old. You pop it on Netflix, you say, oh, look, I love this. Like, let's buy pizza and watch this movie together.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason why this movie is going to stay, because there are so few films, and we laugh about Hollywood trying to make these films that appeal to everyone and just being this like bland garbage that doesn't have any heart. And this is a film that does appeal to everyone while being funny and being sweet and being touching. So I think that if people can find a way to see it, if people keep telling each other about it, this movie is going to live on as a classic. I mean, I feel like it's a comedy, but it's almost really like a family movie, and it's like the height of the genre.
Yeah, I think it kind of has. I think the reason why it's so loved is because it has something for everybody. It has action, it has comedy, it has romance, it has fantasy, it has drama, it has a family story with the grandpa and the son. I hope that is enough to make it stand the test of time, and maybe our generation, continuing to quote this movie, is enough to make younger generations seek it out. But yeah, I hope this is a movie that stands the test of time. I can say that when I was a high school teacher, I had a lot of students who had seen this film and who knew exactly what you were talking about when you would say inconceivable or marriage or
anybody want a peanut?
Anything like that. So I hope this movie stands the test of time. I think it will. And I think it is worthy more than 90% of the movies today of any audience's time. I think if you're trying to decide what to go see, out of all the things that are out there, this is worthy of your time.
I'll say one of my favorite quotes, I'd kind of forgotten about this until I saw it in a clip today. At one point, Peter Falk tells Fred Savage, "When I was your age, television was called books." And I love that quote because it's so ridiculous. Like, they're like sort of similar but not really the same thing at all. And it's also like this like this like underhanded jibe at like kids these days don't know how good they have it, that kind of thing. But just the way that he says it is really funny.
Do we need to do ratings on this, or are we all in consensus that this is a A+ home run, knocked it out of the park?
Yeah, I mean, this is an A+ for me.
It's just as good every time you watch it. I'd say that the sweet spot is like your third time you see it. That's really the peak experience, I think. But still just as good every time.
This film is only mostly dead.
Hopefully not all the way, and hopefully I give it
6 out of 6 fingers.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, there we go. Way to go, Trevor. All right, moving on to our content of the week. What is your content of the week, Jake?
Well, I already mentioned one. It is the actual game, Tomb Raider. It came out a couple years ago, and it is really, really good. Highly recommend it. I know that, like, Lara Croft has the stereotype of being this, like, teenage boy fantasy, big boob adventure, blah, blah, blah. That is not what this is at all. It is a amazing action adventure game with a really, really good story. And I would really recommend it. My other recommend is Black Mirror Season 3 on Netflix. I think Black Mirror is one of the best, I guess, series of short films out currently. Best miniseries. I don't really know what to describe it, but basically it's incredible, and it also is a great kind of one of what Trevor said of Skynet, like stuff that's actually happening or could happen in the near future, and it's just incredibly done, and I love it. It's right up my alley. So if you like kind of like dark, creepy, futuristic stuff, check out Black Mirror Season 3 on Netflix. Trevor, what about you?
All right, I got a couple different things. Number one is the newest music album from one of my favorite bands, The National. Their newest album is called Sleep Well Beast, and
yeah.
It's just as good as all of the other National albums, which are all great. So if you don't listen to The National, check them out. They're awesome. I have sort of a cautious recommend. I haven't seen this movie in a really long time. But if you're really enjoying that Cary Elwes vibe, Robin Hood Men in Tights is a ridiculous film that is not nearly as endearing or as timeless as The Princess Bride, but is completely ridiculous and definitely also more inappropriate. What I would recommend is, if you're going to do it right, you need to watch Robin Hood Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner, and then like the next day watch Robin Hood Men in Tights with Cary Elwes. And you may be surprised at which one you like better.
We should go ahead and say that if you're listening to this and you like Princess Bride, pretty much anything that Rob Reiner directed in the 80s and 90s is worth your time. Spinal Tap, Stand By Me, Harry Met Sally, Misery, A Few Good Men, The American President, all of those, Rob Reiner, 80s and 90s, worth your time. I am here to do what I do best, though, and that is to champion Survivor. Guys, did you know that Survivor is back for season 35 this Wednesday?
Oh my gosh.
I did not know. No. I'll say, I would not know of its existence without you, Cameron.
Cameron, nobody knows. Nobody knows about season 35 except for you.
Wait, is Jeff Probst still on it?
Jeff Probst is still the host, and Jeff Probst looks younger than he did in 2000.
That guy has the best job.
Yes.
For real.
He just, like, he goes to exotic locations and talks in, like, absurdly dramatic voices around a campfire. That's, like, literally his mm-hmm. job.
But for those of you who don't know, season 35 starts Wednesday, 8/7 Central on CBS, and is the theme of heroes versus hustlers versus healers, hustlers, and heroes. There we go.
Wait, did you just make up that theme, or is that real?
No, that's real. The teams are divided this year up into heroes, hustlers, and healers.
Okay, everyone.
What the hell
still,
does that
go
mean?
Watch. Go.
You know exactly what it means.
Okay. Everybody needs to go watch Survivor. That way Cameron can recommend it again next year. Let's keep this show on the air.
They've already shot seasons 36 and 37, so we good to go. We good for at least another year over here. Other than my love of Survivor, though, there's a documentary I watched this week called Gleason. Which is about a guy named Steve Gleason who used to play for the 49ers. The Saints. If you are a fan of football, you may remember him as the guy who blocked the Atlanta Falcons punt right after, or 21 months after Katrina. That kind of signaled that they were back. It was the first game back in the Superdome, if I remember right. It's about his battle with ALS. And kind of to frame it up, he's... starts this as a way to communicate with his son, who he found out his wife was pregnant 6 weeks after he was diagnosed with ALS, and just kind of takes you through the progression of his ALS, his relationship with his wife, his son, his faith, his friendships, his businesses. Like, it's just a deep dive into what his life is like, and it is brutal in every sense of the word, and I think it's something that deserves to be seen. It's a man struggling with his faith. It's a man struggling with what it means to be a husband and a father with this disease, and what it means to try and be an inspiration to a community. And it's beautiful. It's hard to watch as a father and as a husband, but it is, I think it's worth being seen, and it's a great story. Not a great story, that sounds bad. It's a story, though, that deserves to be seen and told. But that's all we have for this week. If you have enjoyed listening to us, please recommend us to a friend. You can recommend us one of two ways. You can either go to our website at Popcorn Optional and listen to episodes there and share that link. Or you can go to iTunes, rate us, review us, share us through iTunes. If you want to talk more with us, you can find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional, or also on Facebook at Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Salina. You can find me online at 321 Cami Time. Jake, where can we find you online?
JakeBrown.tv. Trevor, what about you?
I am at TurboTrevor on Instagram and Twitter.
That is all that we have for this week. We will be back next week, hopefully, to review Flatliners if I can convince Jake and Trevor to go see the film that looks to be terribly great. But until next week, pop, pop.
Oh, man.
It's,
I forget every time.
It still is just a surprise in the worst and best way.